a piece that lamented the past 8 years. It was a piece that said, look, if you really want to do the sort of R&D that America's defense forces need, how are you going to carry that out? And what's the role of universities, and what's the role of technology transition versus longer-range innovation? And this is a piece that is having a lot of influence. And what we were told by Khalil and others back during the transition team period is you write these things and you get very upset because they appear to be just sitting around, and then suddenly somebody picks them up, or somebody needs them, or an opportunity arises. And if you don't have them ready, then you're toast. And if you do have them ready, you're the only person with something ready and you get some traction. A number of us here worked on a piece describing big data and communications technology for higher education. I'll get back to that in a sec. It's a nice piece on innovation and networking, big data computing, security. That piece prepped us for a wonderful discussion with that Jeanette Wing orchestrated with the person, Melissa Hathaway, who was running the 60-day evaluation of America's cybersecurity posture. And now a set of the people who wrote this, Fred and Stefan and others, are part of a Department of Defense review of cybersecurity research. Surface transportation. Sebastian Thrun from Stanford has a wonderful shtick that makes all of improvements of both mass transit and personal transit in this country into an IT problem. So it's, again, these are really worth reading. Robotics, ocean observatories, quality of life, P4 medicine, smart grid, again, back to energy. We wrote a piece on quantum computing and another piece on synthetic biology. And I was at a synthetic biology meeting at the National Academies 2 weeks ago, and OSTP has again picked up this piece, and they're shopping it around. And I think it's likely that there will be a program announced in the next 3 months or so that tries to build computer science, what I would think of this as VLSI-like tools and parts libraries for synthetic biology to really drive it forward. A number of us, Chip and myself and many others in the room, contributed to a piece that attempted to frame the role that universities should play in higher education in the broadband infrastructure rollout currently being carried out by the Department of Commerce and the Department of Agriculture. And this is work in progress, but I think the way to think about this is that the transition team bought into our notion that increased broadband for higher education empowers the next generation of innovators and the next generation of innovations, and at the same time, the money has gone to commerce and agriculture. And the question is, can we bring the entire higher ed community together in a way that lets us play a role? We have renewed the CCC Council. There are a set of names up there that you'll recognize. Most recently, we added the six folks in the brackets on the left. In March, we ran a symposium at the Library of Congress, which was absolutely spectacular, and all of the videos and the slides are on the web. We had an audience of about 100 agency representatives and congressional staffers and six congressional co-sponsors. And let me just describe very briefly what the agenda was. We looked at game-changing advances of the recent past and tried to extract lessons for the future out of this. There were four sessions. The first was the Internet and the World Wide Web. So Alfred Spector gave a great talk on the R&D that enables Google. Right? So Google just draws from all the work that all of us have done over the past 10 or 15 years. A wonderful talk by Eric Brewer on various aspects of cloud computing, Luis Von Ahn on human computation. An interesting aspect of this, you're familiar with CAPTCHAs, and you're presumably familiar with reCAPTCHAs too. And something I hadn't realized is that the entire New York Times archive of essentially image PDFs is going to be OCR'd this year through reCAPTCHAs. All right, so it's worth, again, worth looking at Luis's talk, which is very interesting. A session on the foundations of the field, so Barbara Liskoff on security of online information, Daphne Kohler on machine learning, John Kleinberg on global information networks, right? And so the idea here is the sort of social interaction analysis of the web. This map of the U.S. here, by essentially mining photographs on Flickr and looking at the geo-coordinates and simply producing a heat map of where those photographs are taken, you wind up producing something that's very recognizably a map of the United States. A lot of interesting work. A session on the transformation of the sciences through computation, Larry Smarr and Chris Johnson and Gene Myers talking about the Human Genome Project. And finally, a session on ubiquitous computing, sensing, computer graphics, and robotics. So again, the goal here was to produce a set of material that would expose congressional staffers to what we're doing and what we can do, and it will serve as a resource for students and teachers. We've just concluded a project called the Computing Innovation Fellows Project, and I hope many of you are aware of this and participated in it. Working with the National Science Foundation, we assembled a coordinated postdoc program for computer science. This was a stimulus argument. Jobs are tight this year. There are a set of people who are going to get out of the research game unless we provide a way to keep them in the research and teaching business. So we awarded 60 postdoctoral fellowships. Remarkably, we had 1,200 prospective mentors register and more than 500 applicants apply for postdocs, of which we unfortunately had only 60. One of the important criteria here was we wanted to encourage cross-flow between different types of institutions in order to build lasting bridges that will strengthen computing research for a long time to come. So one version of the implementation of this was we had a restriction that at most two of the postdocs could come from any one institution, and at most two of them could go to any one institution. We had a spectacular set of applicants. The community really came together to do an extraordinary job of executing this program in a short period of time. There were more than 40 distinct institutions represented as the source of the 60 people who got postdocs. There were more than 40 distinct mentoring institutions, that is, places where they're going, 85% academic, 15% industrial. 3/4 of the postdocs are citizens or permanent residents, 40% are female, 12% are underrepresented minorities. So it's a very diverse group, but most importantly, it's an extremely strong group. And our hope is that by sending people to letting them have the opportunity to work at institutions that are significantly different than the institutions they came from, we'll build a set of lasting bridges that make the field stronger. You can't read this, but they came from every imaginable subfield of computer science, right? Just really across the entire spectrum. And this program was administered by Peter Lee, a member of the CCC Council. And Peter's important transition, which became public yesterday, is that he's going to DARPA. Starting yesterday, and Peter will be running a new DARPA office whose focus is high-impact, visionary, university-based research. So this is just a really, really important contribution that Peter's making to the field, and to me, it marks DARPA, I don't want to say returning to the old DARPA, but re-engaging with universities as a source of ideas and a source of talent. And that's going to be Peter's job for the next 2 or 3 years at DARPA. So this is very exciting. And Peter is an extraordinarily visionary and capable guy, and this is a huge contribution. We're currently working on two major thrusts, computing research and healthcare and computing research and energy. Both of these are areas where we've got to be active. And finally, we've just concluded the network science and engineering research agenda, and I'm simply going to turn it over to Ellen Zagura at this point and let her describe this to you. Again, many of you in this room have contributed to it, and as Debbie said, what it is a framework within which members of the research community can push forward various agendas related to network science and engineering, most particularly including the sort of experimental networking that you and the GPO are engaged in. So this has been a Herculean effort, and Ellen has done an extraordinary job, assisted by many of you. This document will be on the web later today, and we certainly invite your comments, but more importantly, we invite your use of this to push various pieces of the research agenda forward. Thanks a lot, Ellen.
Magic moment. it's a choice between you seeing it and me seeing it, I'll go with you. All right. I can see it too. Thank you, Ed. And thanks to Chip and the organizers of GEC5 for giving me the chance to talk to you. Ed and I agreed to split the time where he had 10 minutes and I had, roughly speaking, twice as much, but I promise you that I will stick more to my allocated time as opposed to my proportional allocated time. Let's see. I spoke to you in a previous GEC meeting. I'm going to confess that I don't remember whether it was GEC 3 or 4. I suspect it was 3. And at that time, we were in the, probably not right to call it the early days, but the middle days of this effort. And as Ed indicated and Chip as well, we're really at a what I hope is a sort of momentous point in the effort, and if my PowerPoint animation skills were better, I would have some true illustration of unveiling. Instead, you'll have to imagine that yourself. So this is sort of the official release of version 1.0 of the NETSI research agenda. So for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, let me give you a little bit of context. You will vary from knowing way more than I know about what I'm talking about to, or at least its history, to probably a few of you not knowing much. So let me give you the context. So prior to 2008, there were a wide variety of significant and relevant activities in the networking and distributed systems research communities related to networking research, what sorts of agendas should we be pursuing in order to be very forward-looking to new network architectures, new network technologies, both on a sort of an intellectual side, that is, what are the problems that we should be looking at, but also, importantly, on an experimental side, that is, what do we have available to us to use as we develop ideas and we want to give them a rigorous sort of evaluation. So sort of these, you might call it these sort of two things bundled together, many activities in this space. In fact, the activities that led to the creation of the Genie Project Office are included there, and there were many others. Many of you have used infrastructure that's been created by some of the people who got this sort of thing going, Planet Lab, for example, EmuLab, in this vein of shared infrastructure. In January 2008, Jeanette Wing was relatively new as the NSF size AD, and sort of looked across the activities of NSF and SISE within the networking research area and noticed that, in fact, there were efforts going on in several different parts of SISE that were not linked together. And so she charged a NETSI coordinating group to develop a compelling research agenda for the science and engineering of our evolving complex networks. So, a small task. So that coordinating group helped to organize a set of workshops that occurred in the summer and fall of 2008 to elaborate on this intellectual space, fairly explicitly complementing, that is, adding to the pre-2008 activity. So there was an effort to think about of this network science and engineering space that's fairly broad, which parts had we spent a lot of good time thinking about and developing, and which parts had we perhaps spent less time developing. And so you'll see in a minute when I tell you about the titles of the workshops that there was a focus on complementing what had been done before. And so today we have version 1.0 of this agenda. So what were the workshops? So there were two that I'm going to couple together. One was called The Science of Network Design. John Doyle and John Rakowski led that. There had been a couple of meetings on within the theory community, theory and networking communities, on the theory of network computing that Joan Feigenbaum had helped organize. We also did a follow-on meeting to take what they had done and sort of update it in this NETSI context. So I might characterize those two workshops as elaborating on foundations of the field, foundations of network design. There were two one in behavior computation and networks for human subject experimentation, which was I went to all of these. This was the most far afield for me intellectually and extremely fascinating, actually. And the second one in network design and societal values. And the behavior computation and networks, Mike Kearns from Penn and Colin Kammerer from Caltech led that. Network design and societal values was led by Dave Clark and Helen Nissenbaum. And I might call those the breadth component of the NETSI agenda. There was a workshop that Jennifer Rexford and I led on network design and network engineering, and that combined with a really seminal report that was written out of a 2005 NSF workshop on overcoming barriers to disruptive innovation in networking, I would say, use the term that this forms sort of the core of the agenda. One of the things I've learned in this process is that words are very important to people, and the same word means something very different for different people. So, you know, take every possible caveat here. If I were talking to you individually and I understood exactly where you were in your use of words, I might say something slightly differently. Okay, so the workshop, that's sort of a way of sort of breaking down the intellectual space and showing you the kinds of workshops that occurred. In terms of people who contributed, obviously not names, because I did a kind of back-of-the-envelope calculation. I think there are probably about 150 or more researchers represented across these groups. So the thinking and writing that went on under the GENI planning group, which is a couple of years old now, a GENI Science Council, this NETSI Council, workshop chairs and participants, the GENI Project Office staff, NSF staff, and CRA, CCC. All of these people people in all of these groups made contributions of a wide variety of types to the agenda. Okay, so the report outline, it looks like this. Starts with an executive summary and recommendations, and that's really written to funding agencies as the audience. And in particular, it's really written to United States funding agencies since this came out of the CCC-NSF charge. I suspect those of you who are here from the international community could probably take some of these recommendations and go back to your own funding agencies and urge them to do similar kinds of things. There's nothing about them that's really particular in terms of the recommendation itself to the United States government. Then there's a synthesis chapter, and that's sort of it. So there's a synthesis chapter, and then there are the full reports from each of these five workshops. Those are appendices. Those average, you know, 15 page to 20 pages apiece. So there's a lot of material, a lot of meat in the appendices. The synthesis chapter is the sort of trying to pull all the pieces together and give a succinct kind of summary of what the agenda is calling for. So there's some motivation and framing. There are a set of one-pagers on key research areas, and those do not have a one-to-one mapping with the workshops. That's actually sort of deliberate. The idea was you have the workshops, and then you have some key research areas that tend to cut across several of the workshops. So challenges in network experimentation, new mathematical tools and frameworks, new disciplinary innovations, and new interdisciplinary conversations. There's an exemplar in the area of security, which helps to, you know, every one of these workshops talked about security. And so it attempts to highlight the complexity of the security problem and the various pieces that are needed and the ways in which interaction between experts in different parts of the space are necessary and important. And then the synthesis chapter ends with a summary. So let me show you the highlights. Let me show you these recommendations. And I've worked on this for a very long time. And I went back and I pulled up the original charge, and I think in some ways when you look at the original charge and you look at the recommendations, you might think, well, of course. It takes a lot to get from an initial charge to a set of recommendations that a lot of people support. So, anyway. So there's a recommendation that's essentially quite broad-based. That is that U.S. funding agencies must increase investment in research that leads to a better internet or risk a marginal future role. So the I think the Gini activities in some ways were coincident with and helped spark some additional work and investment in a number of other parts of the world, a number of other countries. And if the U.S. doesn't, so this particular U.S. particularly doesn't get their act together and get funding in place that is an increase for us to be able to do the important work we have to do, we could risk a marginal future role. There's a recommendation around experimental capabilities, and I know this will resonate with everyone in the room, that we need to rebuild the capabilities of network researchers by funding individual efforts, by providing adequate and persistent shared experimental infrastructure, and by supporting research that leads to improvements in experimental methodology. The report has a note that building experimental capabilities is expensive, and traditional NSF forms of funding are typically not enough money and long enough duration for those things to be done in a way that's adequate to the needs of our community. There's a recommendation around foundations that funding agencies should foster and support research activities relevant to network design in the variety of communities that do foundational kinds of work, theoretical computer science, the new network science community, and other theoretical disciplines. This is important for our long-term ability to design robust, scalable, evolvable, changing networks. And a breadth recommendation that funding agencies should support a broad array of interdisciplinary research activities related to understanding the current internet and designing future networks. Within the four research area one-pagers, I went through and I just pulled out from each one bullet item that I happened to find personally interesting. So these are examples of research directions that are called out in the report. You can read them. I'll read them to you anyway. Developing discipline and methodologies to validate models, measurements, and data, and to evaluate candidate technologies in experimental environments. An awful lot of the things that you're doing here are really go directly to trying to expand our understanding and our capability in that area. Developing the foundations of a theory of network architecture that allows rigorous analysis and systematic design of complex network systems, including organizational abstractions such as interfaces and layering. Creating a new class of design methodologies and principles concerned with steering collective emergent behavior over time rather than producing a final artifact. And then understanding how the value placed on security differs among users, institutions, and national governments and the implications for network design. So these is just a single bullet out of each of these one-pagers. They all contain a number of additional bullets, and I really urge you to take a look at those reports and see if there is something among those bullets that inspires you as a research direction. All right, what's next? So this is a living document. I haven't gotten anybody to tell me precisely what that means. I think it may refer to the life of those willing to work on it as opposed to the document itself. So release 1.0 will be available sort of any minute. As soon as I sit down, I'm going to put together, reassemble all the final pieces. It will be on the Gini website. It will be on the CCC website maintained out of CRA. We have a comments mailing list maintained by the CRA. And I think that there's a room in which I can have what I'm calling NETSI office hours, kind of taking off on the GPO's office hours. And I'd welcome any of you to come by and, talk about anything related to NETSI, and I'll be there during that time period. Okay. Questions and comments are welcome. Yes, Henning.
Research ideas, at least
Right. That's a great question. And of course, doesn't have a really simple answer, but let me give you some thoughts. So I think, it's almost certainly dates back more than 10 years that we have seen a substantial difficulty for university researchers to be doing experimental work. And that comes about because of the internet. Our societal dependence on it means it's not our playground anymore. And high speeds mean it's expensive to be able to replicate at any sort of scale and speed what's going on there in a lab. NSF as a research community has grown, has perhaps chosen to spread its money across everyone, which tends to lead to everyone having somewhat less. So that's a fairly old phenomenon, more than 5 years old. The workshop on overcoming barriers to disruptive innovation really called out these kinds of things. I think the parts that are probably newer are the social phenomenon of the internet and the importance of all the applications that are built above the social networking, societal expectations, societal participation, so the part that sort of broadens. I think another important part is the need to figure out how we can do a better job of evaluation and experimentation. That is, when it's wonderful to have platforms in which we can do experimentation, but how do we construct those experiments in ways that are rigorous so that we then reach conclusions that we can extrapolate to environments where we can't necessarily be playing. I also think that this notion, this nascent network science and science of network design, is an area that has a potential to lead to kind of a long-term basis for how do we do design, and how do we reason about complex systems, make statements about their properties, especially in an emerging kind of environment. So that's a long answer to a short question. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.